session number 23370, reel 15.
This is the eighth reel of a taped interview with Peter Gray in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 16th of the 4th, 2002, the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Peter, I wanted to discuss with you the general sort of feelings that you had in relation to your future, given what you were witnessing and experiencing.
Well, probably at that time, we were probably at the lowest ebb that we had been. This was during the wet season. We'd been had a pretty hard amount of work at the 80 kilo camp, came up to the 100 kilo camp, and copped all the wet season, and it was pretty ferocious, like they are in in Burma, and what was not the amount of disease that was floating around. Then we had this brush with cholera, and the work was just absolutely getting people down the whole time, plus me included, but it was just, we were at a very low ebb at that period, and it was very difficult to get yourself out of it, because there was no break from the work, there was no let up in the work. The food hadn't improved. As a matter of fact, it had got very, very monotonous, and it was very difficult to get yourself into a mood of of any hope at all, because things seem to be just so desperate the whole way, the Japs were getting more intolerant. They were sick of it just as much as we were sick of it, but they were sick of it for different reasons, but there was no let up in the amount of work or in the quality of the food, which were the two big factors there, plus the disease that was getting everybody down. Didn't make things very, very good. But that was probably the reasons for the low ebb at that time.
People talk of being in a position where you try and make light of even the worst situation. Is that something that you experienced amongst you and your mates?
Well, you tried to. You tried to keep your spirits up. Not so much consciously, I suppose, but I suppose it's an unconscious thing that you do all the time. Try and find a light way of talking about it, and trying to work out how the football was going back home, or things like that would keep you going, or start an argument about football or a racehorse or something, anything at all, just to keep you going. But even that's a bit difficult to do under those sort of circumstances. But it was this constancy all the time of this amount of work and this lousy old weather we were having all the time. Was everything was wet. You were wet from morning till night till you got back into the camp. And the only thing was that at that time we were, as I say, doing a fair bit of quarrying as well. There wasn't a great deal you could do after dark, so by dark you were generally allowed to start and go home then. But with this quarrying, we had made a face of rock, and one of the jobs was to drill all these holes in the face of the rocks, and then blow them, and when the rock came down, of course, then you had to turn around and break it all up and make little ones out of big ones. There were two or three episodes there that sort of lightened things a little bit. One of the chap guards came up to this bloke and said to him that he wasn't hitting the gourd hard enough, and it was what they call a hammer and tap operation, in that you had a drill that had to be hit with a hammer, and it was generally 7-pound hammers, and what it was that the bloke holding the gourd or the drill, when the hammer hit it, he would turn the drill so that it eventually got a hole well down in it. And this chap said he wasn't hitting it hard enough, so he was got very fussed with this bloke, and this bloke said, "Oh no, I don't hit any harder than that." So the chap made him let go of the drill, and said to the bloke wheeling the hammer, hit it harder, and the bloke kept on going at the same rate, and the Jap insisted, so the bloke gave it an almighty clout with the hammer, and of course it skidded down the side of the drill, and just about wiped his bloke's knuckles off. So consequently, it didn't interfere too much after that. He was badly damaged with his hand, and that made life a little bit better. But then the other episode was with all this firing going on. One of the Australian engineers, or Longdon Engineering Unit, he took over the blasting. Because the Japs were so hairy with their use of the explosives, he said that he would do it and make sure that we didn't get hurt by the way they do these things. So he impressed on these Japs that you had to make the length of your fuse such that you could always walk. You never ran away from a fuse, you always walked away from a fuse, and the usual precautions that they normally take under these sort of conditions. So he taught one of these Japs. This Jap wanted to know how to do it all, so he taught him how to do it and showed him how to do it and made him do it correctly. Now, when these blokes go to set anything off like this, they all yell, they all make all sorts of noises, and we were always told when it was going to blast, so you went and found a big tree and you stood with the tree between you and the blast. Anyway, this yelling started, and the Jap was doing the lighting of these things. We were always done with a lighted bamboo a bit of bamboo, and suddenly as all these explosions started to take place, suddenly there was a hell of a noise, And I yelled everywhere, and we didn't know what the devil was going on. But as it turned out, that this bloke who was doing the lighting of these fuses, he lit 1, 2, 3, 4, I think there was 9 of them all together, and he thought lit number 9, and then he thought number 4 wasn't lit, so he went back to check it, and of course the bloody thing blew up in his face, and it killed him. There was hardly anything left of him, but that made our journey back into camp a little bit better that night. But they also had to have a special detail the following day to build a funeral pyre for this bloke and burn the bugger. So that sort of lightened life a little bit for a while, but life was still pretty grim, but they helped those things.
I take it that at this point there wouldn't have been any concert parties to sort of lighten your way. Probably hardly enough time to do that. But what of characters that stood out and were responsible for helping to keep their spirits up, do you think?
Well, you've always got one or two blokes that are a bit forward in this regard. They'll shout or make an argument or do something to keep people occupied and cause a bit of entertainment. Sometimes you find somebody that will sing or that sort of thing. But at this stage, no, there was none of it going on. Later on it occurred, of course, when things got a bit better, but as I say, this was the low point of our existence up there.
At this low point, how important were things like religion, do you think?
Oh, very important. Particularly those people who were of a religious bent and had a lot of faith. You could quite often... there were... Invariably, every Sunday, there was a church service of some sort. Might only be a dozen blokes, out of the 3,000. Or if you were working, that managed to, when they came in at night or that sort of thing. But yes, religion was it was faith more than anything, more than religion, really. Faith in yourself, faith in people, and faith in God, that there was something there that was worthwhile keeping going.
People talk of people giving up their beliefs. Was that something that you experienced?
No, I didn't. Not of people giving up their beliefs, but people gave up and died. That was just... didn't want to carry on, didn't want to fight anymore. That sort of thing occurred.
Was there any way that you could get them to snap out of it if you noticed someone giving up the ghost?
Oh, yes. If any of your immediate mates or your immediate group showed signs of it, then, of course, you would be at them and you would want to try and... boost their morale as much as you could, but as for that was about the extent of it, really. Again, it sounds a bit selfish, but you had yourself and your own immediate mates to look after. Anything else you could do for anybody else, fine, you'd do it. But this was at that very low period.
So when was it that things started to pick up for you?
When we had finished the bridges, we had done a lot of the ballasting of the railway line. The line started to come through. There was a group of layers. They came through. First of all, there was trucks came through with sleepers, and they laid the sleepers out, and of course then the track business started, and these they had trucks that ran on the line. They had special flange wheels on the underside of them, and which meant that the carrying of the lines was, you know, down to a minimum sort of thing. But once that started to come through, then it was also getting towards the end of the wet season by then, and of course with drier conditions and this lack of mud and muck around the place started to ease off, and life became a little more pleasant than what it had been. Also at that time, once the line started to be laid, then of course a lot of the pressure came off. We at that time were we did the ballasting of the line in our section, which was from 95 up to about 103. We ballasted all that line, and was at this period when we were doing all the ballasting that we also started to be aware of some of the wildlife. During the wet period in particular, we'd heard all these gibbons up in the mountain behind us, or in the hills behind the camp. I can still hear these darn things, because on moonlight nights, particularly when it got towards a full moon, and the sky would be reasonably clear, these things would howl all night. You can still hear them. Beautiful sound, but when you're trying to sleep, it wasn't so bright. But also, this was when we started to pick up with a few of the snakes, etc., around the place. One bloke lying in bed, or lying on his platform, and looked up into the ADAP roof, and there's a snake crawling through the roof, and of course it had got up in looking for rats and that sort of, you know, mice, anything, and it was a python, and anyway he was a little bit worried about it, of course, because he was lying down below and there's this bloody great thing up in the just above him. And he shouted out, and anyway, they eventually went and got one of the Jap guards, and he came across and shot it. And they measured it, and it was 3.6 metres, so it was a 12-foot python. So the bloke was a little bit relieved when they hooked that one down. But on one occasion,
I understand that snake is actually quite good eating. Did you end up?
Oh, yeah. We didn't get it. The Japs took it and put it in their pot. They wouldn't give it to us. But we were out with this ballasting business, and there was also further up the line, and there was also a group of Jap bamboo cutters in the same area, and they were cutting bamboos for pits, etc. They sharpen these things up, bury them in pits, cover the pit over, and of course if you fall down the damn thing, you're transfixed on these bamboo spikes, and they really sharpen up. Anyway, these bamboo cutters were nearby, and this bloke, it was an American, I'm just going, he was, this American was, it was his job to go down to the creek and get a bucket of water for boiling for having a cup of tea at lunchtime. He was also bedeviled at the time by quite a bit of diarrhea. So on the way down to the creek, he stopped behind a large rock and did his business and stood up and went to walk away, and suddenly realised that the rock was a funny looking shape. He hadn't had a look at it, and it was a mound of python. So he did a bit of a take, and then he shouted out to one of these Jap bamboo cutters. And of course, the word for snake in Japanese is snaku. So of course, it's very easy to refer to this thing. So he shouted out to the Japs. They came down, took one look at this thing, and of course shot this damn thing, and then they stretched it out. 7.5 metres, 25 foot of python.
We just stopped the tape because of the rain.
This particular yank, because of it, he'd told the Japs about the snake, they rewarded him and gave him a couple of feet of snake. The rest of it they took for themselves and went back to their camp, and they cooked it and ate it. But it went into our stew for the night, so you only got barely a taste of it, but nevertheless, it was a bit of a welcome addition. But it was just after that time that we were having as we finished the work on that particular amount of work on the line, that we were given a week off at this time. And our particular hut was slightly above the Yanks on the side of a hill, and one of our blokes noticed that there was a snake slithering between our hut and theirs. It was quite a big one, and he yelled out to the Yanks, "Yanks, get up on your beds, there's a bloody great snake coming underneath." And as it wriggled underneath the Yanks' hut, of course. But by the time that it got through to the other side, there was a group of about 20 blokes standing around the other side waiting for it to come out. And when it came out, it turned out that it was a cobra, and it was a big one. And the moment he saw all these blokes standing around, up he got on his hind legs, and he was standing about at least a metre high, and with his beautiful big open head, or this big
collar.
Yeah, the big head. And of course, with all the menace in the world, his tongue flicking out, etc., and slowly looking around this group of blokes. Well, as is usual on occasions when you find a snake, nobody's got a stick or anything else. But the ubiquitous bamboo came into its own again, and one of the blokes had a lump of bamboo, and he smacked it on the head, and it forced it to the ground, And of course, as it hit the ground, there were a volley of stones came, and it was enough to kill the snake. So the snake went off to the cookhouse, and we had 8 foot of cobra that night for tea, amongst all the other bits and pieces. But yeah, there were quite a few of them around. They seemed to suddenly become quite prevalent. There was quite a lot of them around. But I've never seen anything else as menacing as this blasted cobra with his big hood stuck up there. Really wanted to have a go.
Do you recall how you spent that week off?
Yes, during that time, or in that week, there were quite a group of us shot off into the jungle. We got permission from the Japs to go because it was a bit stupid just to walk out of the camp. That was only asking for trouble. And we knew where there were some bit of an old kampong. And where they had been, where these natives had been, there were vegetables growing, things that had been left behind, and we had some tomatoes and some beans and a few other bits of vegetable. Anything that was green we picked up and took it back to camp. And you could pick up bags of leafy vegetable of any sort, didn't matter what it was. It was all better than what we were getting from the through the Japs. So, yes, we spent a lot of that week out foraging and bringing in this stuff to supplement our food. And, of course, trying our luck at seeing if we could get anything out of the river. There was a reasonable sized river, but we didn't have any explosives or anything to do any of that sort of fishing. And not having any other equipment, you couldn't do any fishing. But we were after whatever food we could get. But yeah, that was that, and playing cards was about the subtitle of our week. But in that week also, there was a concert party arrived from one of the other camps. From they were up at the 105, and they came down. There was a lot bigger camp up there, a lot bigger number of men. They had a concert party, and they came down to our camp and put on a concert for us. But as is the always on those occasions, the prime seats down the front are always taken by the Japs, who sit there and wonder at what you're saying and try to pick up things. But everything that was said there was as I remember it, the opening item was given by this bloke, or the MC came out and said, today in the land of our hosts, it is a very special day. So we want to play their favourite tune, so would you all stand? So we knew something was on, so we stood, and of course the Japs didn't know what to do. So eventually, with a bit of urging from the MC, everybody stood up. That was the Japs included. So then the band, or the two or three musicians there, started to play the Colonel Bogey March. Well, as you know, the Colonel Bogey March is also known as bullshit was all the band could play. So, of course, we thought it was a hell of a laugh, and sat down, and the concert carried on. But one of the Japs who was an interpreter, he picked up that there was something wrong, and it caused quite a furore for a few minutes.